welcome, America. Brad Friedman in again for Mike Malloy. You are listening to the Mike Malloy program. Don't worry, you're in the right place. It's just little old me, Brad Friedman for BradBlog.com, your friendly citizen journalist, muckraker, troublemaker, and all-around nice guy. Broadcasting live from Dallas once again today. We're going to be here today and again tomorrow from AM 1360, Rational Radio in Dallas, celebrating sort of the fact that they're moving from terrestrial radio to the internets, maybe to TV, and by way of a little test tonight, actually webcasting. So if you want to look at your humble guest host tonight, you can stop by bradblog.com. We have a chat room over there. We also have video of me. Sorry, guys, but that's the way it goes. Also, my thanks to Old Navy, who is apparently sponsoring us tonight, and we had no idea. You'll find out what that means if you go to the video stream. Another big program for you tonight here on the Mike Malloy Show. We've got Andy Worthington is going to be joining us. He's a freelance journalist, historian, and the author of The Guantanamo Files, the stories of the 759 detainees in America's illegal prison. He's going to be joining us from London as we get towards the end of this year when, oh, wasn't Barack Obama going to be closing down Gitmo right around now? Yeah, how's that working out for you? Also joining us during this program, Charles Johnson, the former right-winger, the creator of the wildly popular, at least once wildly popular, but no, it still is wildly popular, Little Green Footballs. Don't know if you guys know that blog site, but Charles Johnson is a crazy, whacked-out wingnut, or at least he used to be, until he accidentally ran into some common sense or something. He is now thrown over the right. He is going to be with us to explain why and if there's any hope for the teabaggers and wingnuts at all. I don't know if there's hope or not. Also, Dave Clifton is going to be joining us a little bit later tonight. He is the owner and GM of this fine radio station, trying to figure out how the hell we can keep progressive radio on the air in Dallas, where they need to be on the air. He's the owner of this station. He also happens to be engineering for us tonight. Hi, Dave. Can you talk? Can you?
Hi there.
There you go. Hey, Dave.
Still have that speech power.
There you go. They haven't taken that away from you yet. He's going to be joining us later in the show tonight to talk about how difficult it is for the independent progressive media out there to stay alive in this atmosphere where, guys like Clear Channel, Citadel, they own the whole wide world. Hey, Citadel recently filed for bankruptcy, by the way. I'm sure that Bill O'Reilly was on the air talking about how conservative talk radio is a complete failure since Citadel has declared bankruptcy. Wasn't he talking about that? Nah, doubt it.
That was a prearranged maneuver.
Was it? Well, he's still going on and on that Air America declared bankruptcy, acting like they're not on the air. Now, they may just barely be on the air, but they've always been on the air. Even when they after they applied for bankruptcy protection, they still stayed on the air. Bill O'Reilly lied to his viewers and told them otherwise. Anyway, we're going to get to Andy Worthington in a second from London, but I do have to make a point of giving my regrets here to Karl Rove, this poor fellow. Apparently, he's now been granted his second divorce in Texas, right here, after 24 years of marriage, said family spokeswoman Dana Perino. Hey, Dez, we need a family spokesperson, don't we? Maybe Dave can be our family spokesperson. Now, if we can figure out something that we have to speak about, we'll have a spokesperson do it. So stand by, Dave, just in case we need a spokesperson. Karl Rove and his wife Darby were granted a divorce last week. Of course, that was after he was granted the right to marry her in the first place. This jackass who has been keeping Americans from being granted the right to marry whoever they want. Rights? They're only good for Republicans, apparently. All right, what other business do... Oh, the phone lines tonight. Our phone lines tonight and tomorrow night, this week only. Don't bother the Malloys. Don't call the Malloys house. They don't want to hear from you. They're resting. Call us instead at 214-631-1360. That's 214-631-1360. Oh, that's the local number. Let me give you the... Okay, so you don't have to pay for it. 800, here we go, 277-1637. You'd think this is the first time I've done this sort of thing. 800-277-1637, extension 703. That's a lot of numbers, so I will keep reminding you of it all night long. Get in while you can. We'd love to hear from you on Gitmo, later on Wingnuts and Teabaggers, later on the media, and then we'll try, as I might, to open up the phone lines for anything and everything that I can that you want to talk about over your public airwaves. Use them or lose them, I always say, and I'm afraid we're losing them already. Any other business I got to do? Okay, that's it for now. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get in touch with London, bring back Andy Worthington very momentarily after this quick break. Oh, it's a big show. You know, Glenn Greenwald, what did he tweet? It's awesome how those who insist upon traditional marriage laws exploit loose, unchristian, no-fault divorce law in Texas. Karl Rove. Jackass. You're listening to the Mike Malloy Program. Brad Friedman in for Mike. Stick with us. Much more straight ahead.
Because it's under the complete jurisdiction and control of the United States, but technically Cuba has sovereignty over it, or formal sovereignty. So the government could argue, well, look, somebody else has sovereignty, so they don't have legal protections, but we can control them. It was a first step, really, to establishing offshore prisons outside the law.
Yeah, well, that worked. First step indeed. Apparently, first step and the the last step. Barack Obama was supposed to have closed Gitmo. That was one of the first things he did when he came into office, announced that it was going to be closed in a year. Everyone was just delighted to hear that. Well, that's been pushed back a little bit. And Lord knows at this point how long we're going to have to push it back. We're going to talk about that and much more with Andy Worthington, who joins us from London. Andy's a freelance journalist, historian, and a regular contributor to the UK's Guardian, the Daily Star, Huffington Post, Counterpunch, Alternate, everywhere else. He's also the author of The Guantanamo Files, the stories of the 759 detainees in America's illegal prison. And now he's the filmmaker, along with Polly Nash, of a new documentary, Outside the Law, Stories from Guantanamo. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Program, Andy. Great to talk to you.
Hello, Brad. It's nice to be here.
This film, well, we're going to talk about it in a minute. I have to keep remembering to give out the phone number, 800-277-1637, 800-277-1637, extension 703. And I'm told, remind everyone, you can go to bradblog.com and watch the live webcast tonight, courtesy go to bradblog.com. It's courtesy of rationalradio.org. All right, Andy. Well, I've been watching clips of this new film, and it's startling, frankly. I expected it would be, because if you ask me, this is perhaps the most underreported story of the last decade. And but let's pick it up. We'll talk about the film in a minute. We got some clips to play. Well, let's talk about this promise that old Barack Obama had made a year from now. He was supposed to close it down. When was the official closing date supposed to be for Gitmo, Andy? Was that January?
Yeah, January 22nd.
Do we now have any alternate closing date, or is it all completely up in the air right now?
It all seems to be very much up in the air, I'm sad to say. The latest that I've heard is that this plan to buy the Thompson Correctional Facility in Illinois, even if it's going to go ahead, lawmakers, the great stumbling block in this story of closing Guantanamo, I have to say, more than anybody else, have not provided the funding for it, so that's going to have to be negotiated. The prison would have to be refortified. These being extremely dangerous men, as we're persistently told.
Yes.
The last that I heard over the Christmas period was that even if this was all to go smoothly, then the prison wouldn't be operational until 2011.
At best, yeah.
Yeah.
Because we're a bunch of cowards and sissies, and we're just, still reeling about the underwear bomber on Friday who didn't kill anybody, and we're just... We're just terrified. We're terrified of everything, at least everything that we're told to be terrified about. The things that we're not told to be terrified about, the folks who are in your film who really, help tell the story. Andy, I think that have you ever been called to testify on Capitol Hill about all of these interviews that you've done with these detainees?
Do you know that I haven't? No. Maybe the time is right for this to happen.
Well, I think it should be, because you're the guy who's documenting, the people who are really there. These were called over and over again the worst of the worst. Speak to that, Andy Worthington. Are they the worst of the worst? Even the couple of maybe a dozen who may have done something wrong, not that they were given a trial, but... Are we talking about the worst of the worst, or are we talking about just one of the greatest scams that's ever been played on this country and perhaps the world?
Yeah, we're partly dealing with an enormous scam. The big problem is that the Bush administration was so arrogant that it didn't care that it didn't know who it had rounded up. It was so determined that everybody that ended up there was a terrorist. That it ignored and hid for as long as possible the glaring truth that actually huge bounty payments had been made to the Afghan and Pakistani allies of the U.S. military. So, predictably, anybody that they could find was handed over as a terrorist. There was no screening of the prisoners as the U.S. military wanted and had done since Vietnam.
And as required by the Geneva Conventions.
Yes, exactly. And as required by common sense, let's face it. I mean, in wartime things get messy. The first thing that you do on the front line, which, the U.S. military had followed from Vietnam onwards, was that you hold tribunals close to time and place of capture to separate out all these farmers and taxi drivers and nobodies who, of course, ended up in Guantanamo and were famously... labeled the Mickey Mouse prisoners by Major General Michael Dunleavy, who was one of the first commanders of the prison.
And how long were some of these Mickey Mouse prisoners who had done nothing wrong, and they were turned in, and we're talking about, was it $250,000 or the equivalent of $250,000 that they were putting out as bounties for some of these folks?
Yeah, I think that's how it works out in terms of what the money would be the equivalent of what they were paying in Afghanistan, probably only about half that in Pakistan, so maybe only $250,000. Maybe only 100, 125,000 would be the equivalent in Pakistan.
Andy, I would turn you in for $125,000, my friend.
Well, exactly. Who wouldn't turn in somebody they didn't like or that they didn't know, or some stranger that they could just label as, hey, I saw this guy in Tora Bora with Osama bin Laden.
So how long were some of these, as you referred to them, Mickey Mouse prisoners, people who were only there because of these bounties? How many folks are we talking about, and how long were some of them being held?
Well, some of them are still there, I have to say. We're down to 198 prisoners now, but there's no way that all of those guys are, the worst of the worst. There's no way that all of those guys are even, young men who had traveled to Afghanistan to fight with the Taliban before the 9/11 attacks. There are still innocent people in Guantanamo who are caught up you know, for nothing. I mean, either because they were handed over for bounty payments or because the U.S. military was acting on intelligence, which was, you know, appalling because they had no intelligence. They didn't know who to trust. They were relying on warlords in Afghanistan or they were relying on kind of snitches in Pakistan to tell them who they needed to be going after. There are still people like that.
And how many total have gone through Gitmo at one point? Are we? Is this the 759 number that you in the title of your book?
Yeah, well, that was the number in an early draft of the book, actually. I mean, the final number was 779.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 570 or something of these guys have now been released. Six others died in Guantanamo. You know, and as I say, we're down to 198 now. And,
How did they die?
The prisoners who died?
Yeah.
Well, one of them died of cancer, which had apparently not been treated as it could have been. The other five, well, it depends who you ask, really. You ask the prisoners themselves, and they're all pretty convinced that, you know, that these were all men of spirit who had been opposed to the regime that they'd found themselves in. They'd all been long-term hunger strikers, so they were certainly physically weak. But according to their fellow prisoners, their spirit was strong. And yet all of them apparently committed suicide.
Unbelievable. We're gonna talk more about this. Take your calls, 800-277-1637, extension 703. We're speaking with Andy Worthington, filmmaker of Outside the Law, Stories from Guantanamo. This is so disturbing. It is so troubling. And the fact that nobody knows about it, pretty much other than you, Andy. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Much more straight ahead. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy program. For those who are checking in via the live web video cast that we're trying out down here in Dallas as AM 1360 is preparing to go off the terrestrial radio and onto the web. Apparently, I'm their guinea pig. Happy to serve those who have asked about it in the bradblog.com chat room where you can watch the video and participate in the chat. Apparently, my voice and my face are out of sync. I blame my face. Anyway, you're at the Mike Malloy program. Our phone number is 800-277-1637, extension 703. London calling indeed. We're speaking with Andy Worthington, author, journal historian, and now filmmaker of the new documentary, Outside the Law, Stories from Guantanamo. And they are compelling stories, and I believe perhaps the most undertold story of the last decade, just what the hell is going on at Gitmo. Now we've got, I do have to bring him back online, don't I? There we go. Andy Worthington, how will this failed bomb plot that everybody, that all the cowards and liars are freaking out about last Friday, how is this now going to affect the plan to close Gitmo that was a plan that never got started in the first place, apparently? Is this just going to make things worse, even harder? Or are we now, do we have Yemenis who are down there in Gitmo that we can't release either now?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's apparently the way that it's going. I mean, what we need is somebody to inject some common sense into things. But when all that we have are these cowardly lawmakers, like you say, and, you know, and the cheerleaders in the right-wing media, then, you know, it's a very one-sided story. Everybody's leapt on the fact that this this failed bomber, I mean, a pretty useless figure from what I can see, had traveled to Yemen, and now they've come up with this story that the Yemeni branch of al-Qaeda involves a couple of guys who had been in Guantanamo and perhaps had failed to be deprogrammed sufficiently very angry about what happened to them, a handful of people. This story has all been tied up together to suggest that, oh, my God, we can't release any Yemenis. You know, the Obama administration had managed finally to release six men who had done nothing apart from being in prison for 8 years just before Christmas, and now the story is no more Yemenis to be released. Well, they're the biggest group of prisoners in Guantanamo, and you know, there are quite very clearly, when you look at the stories, many innocent men amongst these Yemenis who need to go home after all this long ordeal that they've suffered. But now the story is no Yemenis to go. We're not really joining the dots here, guys, are we? Because the two guys that are supposedly part of this terrorist organization in the Yemen, and, you know, I've no idea how overblown this is, but let's say that even on the factual basis this is true. The two men that we're talking about are Saudis. They're Saudis who went through the rehabilitation program in Saudi Arabia, which didn't work for these guys, and are now operating in Yemen. Why is this anything to do with people in Guantanamo who have been cleared for release many years ago in some cases by military review boards established by the Bush administration, the same Bush administration that released these Saudis who have ended up in Yemen, let's not forget. Some of these prisoners who've been approved for release by the U.S. courts, the real heroes in this story over the last year, I must say, and have also been cleared for release by the interagency task force established by President Obama, which over the course of the year has been looking at the cases of which prisoners can be released.
So
what's
been
the problem? Let's just carry on with getting some of these people out of there, shall we?
So they've been...
No. What do we get? We get hysterics instead.
They've been cleared. We know they didn't do anything. We know they're not terrorists. And they're still sitting there without a trial, without cause. Let's play a couple of these clips from your film, Andy. I wish the hell more people could see this film, could hear these stories. Tony, let's cue up clip number one there. This is one of the detainees, Omar. How do you say his name?
De Gaez.
Omar De Gaez. He was a Gitmo detainee from 2002 to 2005, and he appears to be in the video in the interview. Either missing an eye, we'll find out what happened about that after this clip. Go to clip number one, Tom.
It was the middle of the day. Suddenly I hear a scream from Maddie, and they're saying, look out from the window, just look out. Police surrounded the house. See, it can't be true. I was scared. I stand up in the window, and I see police everywhere, like ants, everyone wearing black and holding guns in their hands, and they surrounded the house and jumped inside the house. The first thing they said is, where's your gun? Where's your gun? Said, I'm never going to have passport and visa.
So this guy was taken in. He was held for 3 years. What was the ostensible cause? What was the reason he was rounded up in the first place?
Oh, well, I have no idea, actually, Brad. And you know, Omar was actually held for 5.5 years. He wasn't finally released until December 2007. I mean, he was living in a villa in Lahore, hundreds of miles away from Afghanistan, in Pakistan. He was captured, I think, shortly after there had been some terrorist attacks in Pakistan. So, you know, it's easy to see that what was happening at that time was that suddenly there was a rush on. Let's round up some likely-looking foreigners, and we'll label them as terrorists. I mean, this happened persistently in Pakistan throughout the first 6 months of 2002, was that there were numerous house raids based on God knows what sort of intelligence, because nearly all of these guys have been released over the years.
And instead of having hearings, as we talked about in the previous segment, instead of having some kind of battlefield hearings to try to figure things out, as per the Geneva Convention, the White House specifically did not want these done on the battlefield. Do you have any idea, through all of your reporting, Andy Worthington, on this, what was the White House afraid of? Why didn't they want these hearings done to determine then and there whether there was even probable cause to keep some of these folks?
Well, you know, I mean, I've wondered about this. I mean, part of it is the particular arrogance of the people involved. And if you look at the small group of men who were involved in making these decisions, then, you know, you need to focus in particular on Vice President Dick Cheney, on his closest advisor, his legal counsel, David Addington, on Donald Rumsfeld, the defense secretary. Now, all of these guys, you know, their history, Cheney and Rumsfeld, dates back to Nixon. These are guys who believed in the unfettered power of the executive. You know, Cheney and Addington got together in the late 80s to defend Ronald Reagan during the Iran-Contra scandal. It was their belief that the president should be beyond anybody's control, effectively, you know, a dictator, a king, what the United States was established to overthrow. And with this kind of arrogant mindset, they established in their minds that they weren't making any mistakes. That, you know, this new threat had come along, the old rules were really, you know, old-fashioned and useless, and they didn't consider that the way that they were operating was going to lead to any mistakes. Now, you know, it's a small jump from that to realize that having not considered that they would have made mistakes, they considered that everybody they had was guilty. And that's really what's happened. They started off from a presumption of guilt. And if people wouldn't voluntarily say to them, hey, yeah, you know, that was me hanging out with Osama bin Laden in the Tora Bora Mountains, then they worked on them to get them to confess the story that they believed was true. And that's really, you know, that's the really chilling heart of this Guantanamo story, is that innocent people, or let's say people who had been out there fighting with the Taliban against the Northern Alliance before the 9/11 attacks, had nothing to do with international terrorism, didn't know bin Laden, Mullah Omar, Ayman al-Zawahiri, all these guys, knew nothing about any of it, were treated as though they were resistant to interrogation if they couldn't come up with some compelling information for the intelligence services. And that's when the torture kicked in. That's when they started getting heavy with these guys.
Because they had nothing to say. They had nothing to tell them, so they had to torture it out of them whether they had something to say or not. Let me go to clip two here, because some of this stuff, you know, I just find it heartbreaking. I really do. Moazzam Begg. Is that how you say his name?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Moazzam Begg. Also, 7 years this fella was held in Gitmo. Do you remember? I know you've...
Well, no, Moazzam was actually seized in January 2002. He was held in Afghanistan for a very long time and then spent about 2 years in Guantanamo, almost all of it in solitary confinement, and was released in early 2005.
Here's Moazzam Begg, clip number two, Tony.
Most children, including my own, when I was in custody, had problems trying to describe or explain how come their father never comes to any of the parent meetings, how come the father never comes to pick them up to school or to take them to sports day or to be there to watch them doing their plays. Normal people's mentality is, if he's in prison, he must be a bad man. It's difficult to explain that places like Guantanamo exist, where you don't have to be good or bad. You just simply exist there because people take you there.
How many children does Moazzam Begg have? Andy,
Moazzam has four children, if I recall correctly. And like many of the prisoners in Guantanamo, he didn't see his youngest child. It was born after he was captured. And he's very eloquent when he talks about the difficulty of reconnecting with a very young child that you've never seen, that you suddenly arrive one day. You know, the child is, in his case, I think, was only four. But now, of course, there are men meeting their youngest child who are 7, 8 years old, and they don't know their father.
This stuff really, really ticks me off. It really does. We're going to take a quick break here and then come back with some calls at 800-277-1637, extension 703. Folks on the Internet who freaked out just now, apparently, because we lost our audio on the maybe even the video on the video cast. They're working on it. They're tweaking it. They're trying to get us back in sync as they're working it out. Bear with us. Go over to rationalradio.org if you need to. Stream it over there. For now, we'll have the video back up shortly. But before I go to a quick break here, a caller asked again, and he didn't want to stay on. He had a bad cell signal. But let's be clear. These Yemenis they're talking about who were released that may have been part of this airplane underwear bomber plot, they weren't Yemenis at all. They're Saudi Arabians. They're now in Yemen, right?
That's right.
So even that story is wrong. God, this entire thing is just absolutely maddening. And it's real maddening that Barack Obama isn't doing something about it to put an end to this once and for all. I don't give a damn what they say in Congress. And it's not just, Andy, it's not just the Republicans, by the way. You know, it's Harry Reid, who doesn't want to let these terrible people run wild in the U.S. God, it's maddening. All right, sorry. Had to get that out of my system. I suspect
No, I understand, Brad, really.
Yeah, really. But that's, you know, why I love having you on. I'm going to try to keep having you on whenever I sit in for Malloy to keep telling these stories, because, God damn it, somebody's got to. All right, Brad, in for Malloy. More Andy Worthington, and then we'll lighten it up in the next couple of hours right after this.
I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.
I certainly won't back down. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, speaking with journalist, author, now filmmaker, Andy Worthington from London, about his new documentary film, Outside the Law, Stories from Guantanamo, the stories that no one else is telling, frankly, other than Andy and his co-director, Polly Nash. Folks, we've got links over at bradblog.com where folks can get your film. I hope you will. I hope you will, and I hope you'll give it to folks, to other folks. For those who are watching on the live webcast stream that they're testing out here at AM 1360, please forgive the glitches, hiccups, and snags as they're trying to work things out. Let me get to a caller here, Matt, in East Jordan, Michigan. Welcome to the Mike Malloy program, Matt.
Yeah, hi, Brad, and thank you for trying to keep the Gitmo issue alive. I just wanted to point out a footnote that I think sheds a little light on how we got to this bizarre situation where we're torturing prisoners from Central Asia and the Middle East, you know, at a base on a bay in a Caribbean island. Next year, December 29th, would mark the 120th anniversary of the Wounded Knee Massacre. The Wounded Knee Massacre, you know, happened today on the December 29th. And it was only 8 years later that the Spanish-American War broke out. And there were a large number of army generals that were involved in the various wars against the indigenous population, including the Wounded Knee Massacre. Mm-hmm. And Teddy Roosevelt, of course, was not involved in the Wounded Knee Massacre, but he was certainly involved in what was called Indian policy. And the Wounded Knee Massacre is referred to as the battle, and it sort of supposedly marks the end of the Manifest Destiny era. But I think that's a complete falsehood. I mean, I think there's a direct link from the Wounded Knee Massacre up until the present day.
Okay, well, thank you for that question. Yeah, we've been writing quite a bit at Brad Blog about America's rich history, frankly, of this sort of thing, of militarism, of torture. Do you see any ties, direct ties, yourself, Andy Worthington, with the point the caller makes?
Well, I suppose so, yeah. I mean, I think when you look at the bloody history of America, rather than the mirror that America likes to hold to itself as this beacon of human rights and opportunity, and obviously there's some kind of disconnect between the two. You know, what I think is particularly scandalous about what happened in the wake of the 9/11 attacks was the way that what had been covert in so many cases became overt. You know, I don't think there was really much intention on the part of Dick Cheney, primarily, to want to hide anything that was going on. You know, these guys took a very bully boy approach to everything, more sensitive and rational and intelligent and practical approaches to things were swept aside, you know, and that's what we've had to live with. And, I mean, in some ways, the more visible sign of things in Guantanamo is only the tip of an iceberg, really, of a bigger picture, I think. You know, the kind of torture that was implemented by the CIA, which kind of came more out from undercover from where it had been, let's say, you know, from what we know from Central and Southern America in the 70s and the 80s, for example, you know, is only part of the picture. You know, what I find really disturbing about all this is the way that these kind of techniques were implemented by Donald Rumsfeld and infiltrated the whole of the U.S. military. And, you know, and I'm depressed to this day that actually not more noise has been made about really cleaning up the U.S. military, getting back to a position of saying, look, we have to uphold the Geneva Conventions. You know, I think Americans have been lucky that that people haven't turned the tables on them yet, on
yet.
The U.S. military
yet.
Serving abroad.
Are we cleaning up anything? I mean, why, in your estimation, Andy Worthington, why isn't Obama taking a more aggressive action? He had a good start out of the gate, you know, when he promised to close down Gitmo after a year. Okay, I understand he ran into roadblocks with Congress because they're, you know, disinformed wingnuts and cowardly Democrats. But why isn't Obama out front? Why isn't he making more of this? Do you have any explanation for it?
Yeah, the only explanation that I can come up with, unfortunately, is that when it comes to barking loud and making a big noise, it's something that Republicans do very well, and it's something that Democrats are useless at. It's really as simple as that. He really stood up and shouted down these idiots back in the spring when the whole thing started to turn. You know, the story of Greg Craig and how he fell out of favor is really the rather depressing parable, really, of the Obama administration. I know many people have told me that there are many reasons to be suspicious of Greg Craig and many of his political dealings. But he was the driver of the executive orders ordering the closure of Guantanamo, cleaning up America's act, banning torture, I mean, upholding the torture ban, I should say, you know, reinstating the Geneva Conventions, the humane treatment of prisoners, setting the deadline for the closure of Guantanamo. And Craig was underway for bringing some of the, you know, the most innocent of the innocent people at Guantanamo, the Uyghurs, the Muslims from China's Xinjiang province.
You know, I'm glad to hear that Greg Craig did anything good.
He was trying to do this in the spring. They were going to bring... With the approval of senior figures.
I got to get out, Andy. I'm sorry to say. Let me point folks over to your website, andyworthington.co.uk. We've got links to his books and his movie, Outside the Law, Stories from Guantanamo, at bradblog.com. Andy, thank you for staying on the most underreported story of the century.
You're welcome, Brad.
All right, brother. Have a happy new year, my friend.
Cheers, and you.
All right. Much Bye-bye. More, much happier right after this. Brad in for Malloy. All right, welcome back to the Mike Malloy program. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, your friendly citizen, journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, trying to cheer myself up now after that last hour, because I'll tell you what, man, that stuff ticks me off. We were talking to Andy Worthington about Gitmo, this mess that continues to this day that Obama is not taking the lead on, is not doing anything about. Hundreds and hundreds of prisoners, tortured, mistreated, innocent people let go. Hundreds of them were let go because they didn't do a damn thing. There's still 198 of them sitting there. None of them have gotten trials. Most of them are innocent entirely. Didn't I say I was trying to cheer myself up? How's that going for you, Brad? Our video webcast, I'm told, may be fixed. We're shaking out the bugs here for AM 1360 down here in Dallas, where we are trying to save terrestrial radio. Well, progressive terrestrial radio. Doing what we can. Looking for an angel. Stop by rationalradio.org. Get in touch with Dave Clifton here, and if you can help Dallas continue to have progressive radio on the air, they're going to continue on the internets, on the stream. That's why we're helping them test this this web video broadcast tonight. But man, I don't want to lose progressive radio in Dallas. I don't want to lose it anywhere, but we're losing it everywhere, what little there is. You know, this American prisoner in Afghanistan, who recently released a videotape. What did they show? Pictures of Guantanamo, pictures of Abu Ghraib. We're worried about a guy with explosives in his underwear, and we gave the best goddamn tool to these idiots and terrorists that they could ever use to recruit people, and we're still doing it? We're still doing it! How's that cheering yourself up going, Brad? Not so well. Thanks for asking. So the video is fixed. We're also, don't laugh at me, Dez. We're also having we're having live chat at bradblog.com. Going over there, 99, Agent 99 is keeping an eye on the chat room. Thank you very much. I'll thank you now because I'll forget to later, as always. What other kind of business do I have? Coming up momentarily after the break, Charles Johnson of Little Green Footballs, a reformed wingnut. Another reformed wingnut is going to be joining us. We had Frank Schaefer last night, a reformed religious right winger. Charles Johnson was a serious wingnut, and he has made a turn like, oh, it's a David Brock-like turn. Does anybody know what that means? Media Matters, David Brock. God love him for it. I want to talk to him if there is any hope for the teabaggers or if we're stuck with this phony red, blue, right, left, liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat phony paradigm that has been set up to keep things like Gitmo rolling. Keep it rolling because it's not just the Republicans who don't want to shut it down. Harry Reid doesn't want to either. Congress is not going to fund. We've got a place. Illinois is begging. Thompson, Illinois is begging for jobs. They've got a federal prison there sitting empty. They would like to bring these Guantanamo people up there. Give them trials. Get rid of the ones who aren't guilty of anything. And even that is being held up. Man, it's infuriating. How's that cheering yourself up going, Brad? Still stinking. Yeah, that's what I thought. This will work. Speaking of teabaggers, Orly Tates. See, I'm going to try to cheer myself up with Orly Tates. That's how low it's gone. Orly Tates. She, let's see. She's, of course, the birther queen. She has now her ally has broken away because he says he fell in love with her. Hey, Tony, I don't know if you have any, soap opera music up there, but feel free to bring it in if you do. But all right. David Weigel reports at the Examiner. The word for this is strange. For much of 2009, a disbarred attorney named Charles Lincoln played key roles in Orly Tates's multiple birther lawsuits against President Obama. Lincoln claimed to be a law clerk for Tates, and he showed up again and again to file documents or assist her in court. Well, last week, Lincoln went on his personal blog and filed a lengthy and emotional post confessing that he had fallen in love with Tates, who was married, and been used by a, quote, disloyal and treacherous person. Here's what Lincoln had to say. By mid-October, when we were in New York together and Lucas Smith published his declaration, this is about this whole birther business and Obama not being from here. I had wrapped my life around Orly's, and I guess I honestly believed she had wrapped hers around mine, and she said over and over again how much she was committed to me and how she never wanted us to separate. 3 weeks later, she abandoned me, and yet some people have the nerve to call me mentally unstable. I am honest about where I come from. Orly is not. Orly used her words and promises to induce me as long as she wanted, and then she dumped me with no regard to her promises whatsoever. Orly's lack of judgment in the handling of our relationship exactly paralleled her lack of judgment in handling the constitutional eligibility litigation. She needed me and probably still needs me in every possible way, but I don't have her husband's money, and so she chose to dump me, to dump real love for the illusion of piles of Federal Reserve notes and other credits, and she goes on with her reckless rage and fire. Don't make that face, Desi. It's teabagger love. Am I cheering myself up yet? Maybe so. That was yesterday. Today, Orly Tates calls for followers to bear arms. Of course, she spelled it B-A-R-E. Yes, I know. You don't have to show it. That's how she spelled it. B-A-R-E, arms. Attorney dentist Orly Tates, whose crusade against the legitimacy of President Barack Obama's birth certificate earned her marginal fame in 2009, appears to be at her wit's end, reports Stephen Webster over at rawstory.com today. Responding to a fan's post to her website, Tates highlighted both her opinion of the U.S. government and her prowess with the English language, claiming that now is the time for citizens to bear, B-A-R-E, arms. She likely meant bear arms, as in to carry, convey, deliver, or fetch, Stephen tells us. But that's besides the point. Tates's full passage reads, seeing targeted destruction of our economy, didn't that happen in the Bush years? Our security, Well, didn't we have problems with that in the Bush years? Dissipation of American jobs. Oh, yeah, that kind of happened during the Bush years, too. Massive corruption in the government. In spades in the Bush years. Congress, Department of Justice, and Judiciary. It might be time to start rallies and protests using our Second Amendment right to bear arms and organize militias. To put that in a complete sentence, the de facto leader of the birther movement wants armed people to organize against the government. Now she's a community organizer. Go figure. Orly Tates, queen of the birthers. Heartbreaker. And now apparently revolutionary. Prepare for war, my friends. We're going to talk about that war right after this break with Charles Johnson of Little Green Footballs, who thankfully pulled himself out of the Orly Tates orb. Out of that swirling cesspool to come back to reality. And by the way, I know there's a lot of people, a lot of you folks, a lot of you right-wingers are out there listening tonight. You're curious. You want to know what reality, you're reality curious. And you've tuned in tonight to the Mike Malloy program to hear what goes on in the real world. We're glad to have you here. We want to bring, it's okay, come back, step into the light. Charles Johnson did. He's going to tell us how, why, and if the rest of you crazy folks out there who we'd love to hear from can do the same, you can give us a call at 800-277-1637, extension 703. That's 800-277-1637, extension 703. If you'd like to talk to me or Charles Johnson about the teabaggers and the teabaggery and how the hell we're going to save the world, all of that straight ahead in the next hour. And I plan on being done with that by the next hour. We're going to save the world. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Much more straight ahead. Stay with us.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy program. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, live and local for you, coast to coast and around the globe, broadcasting from AM 1360, Rational Radio in Dallas, Texas, the Big D here to save AM 1360. The GM is going to be joining us, Dave Clifton, the owner and GM of this fine radio station that will be leaving the terrestrial airwaves at the end of this week. He's going to be joining us a little bit in the next hour. Someone, is there an angel? I'm sending out a beacon. Is there an angel? Is there someone who can save progressive radio in Dallas? If there is, go to rationalradio.org and let Dave Clifton know about it. Because if I hear another ad from Dick Cheney for Sarah Hutchinson, what the hell's her name? Kay Bailey Hutchinson, who's running against Rick Perry. Like, Rick Perry isn't far enough to the right. So Kay Bailey Hutchinson is running against him for governor in the primary, and apparently she's okay with Dick Cheney giving her an endorsement. I wouldn't want that guy anywhere near me. I think I said last night it's like syphilis. I'd rather have syphilis than an endorsement from Dick Cheney, yet she's quite proud of it. That's the kind of crap you hear on the airwaves if we lose Rational Radio AM 1360. So don't let that happen. We're also streaming video tonight. We think we got it back in sync over at bradblog.com, where we've got a live chat room. Join us there and call us to talk to me and or Charles Johnson is going to join us in a second. 800-277-1637, 800-277-1637, extension 703. All right. Well, we're delighted. I am, frankly, thrilled to have Charles Johnson with us. Charles is a former right-winger, creator of the hugely popular Little Green Footballs, co-founder of the Right Wing Pajamas Media, who has announced now that he has left the right, and so I suppose he's estranged from those pajama-wearing pajama media people. You can Read about all that he has to say at his highly recommended blog, littlegreenfootballs.com. He joins us now. Hey, Charles, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, Brad. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Did you ever think, let's say 2 years ago, that you would be on the Mike Malloy program?
You know, I got to tell you,
yeah.
I get called right-wing a lot, but I used to really resist that label because I never really thought of myself as right-wing at all. And in fact, if you go back and look at what I used to write before 9/11, you'll find that I was rather critical, to say the least, about George W. Bush, and was not anything like what you might consider a stereotype right-winger. So
good.
And for a long time, I used to I actually posted several times about this, that I resisted being labeled a conservative or a right-winger at all. But what happened was, because I was in favor of after 9/11 of a strong response to that attack, I got put in that category, and there really was, you know, I mean, I couldn't say anything that would change people's opinion, and it just, you know, after a while, I just stopped protesting, because, you know.
Well, no,
doing no good.
You know what? Fair enough. And I'll be happy to apologize for that, because I hate it when, you know, for example, the New York Times refers to Brad Friedman, liberal blogger. You know, where the hell do you get off, liberal? You don't know anything about me. You know, I'm quite conservative on many issues. And that's exactly what I wanted to talk to you about, really. And we'll get to this in a bit. But this whole phony paradigm, as I call it, this right, left, red, blue, Republican, Democratic, conservative, liberal paradigm, it's phony. And it's meant to put guys like you, Charles, into one camp, guys like me into another. We're supposed to battle it out and not actually talk about the real issues.
I agree. It is very phony. And I like I say, I used to battle against this a lot. And the problem is that there's a real strong impulse among the mainstream media in particular to put you in one category or another.
Yeah, there is.
And no matter what you do, they're going to do it to you. So, I mean, all you can do is keep protesting as much as possible. And now, you know, I made a pretty public break from the right wing, so I can no longer be put in that category. But I'm sort of resistant to being put in a left-wing category as well. I prefer to be called independent.
Well, yeah, as do I, and I appreciate that, and I don't know why we have to call anybody anything. You know, you've got your issues, you've got the things that you're writing about, the things that you're reporting on. Let those speak for themselves without putting anybody in a category. And the reason obviously that I put you into that category, calling you a former right winger, is to explain that I do think, and I did used to read Little Green Footballs, and it did seem to me that you might have been at one time somebody who I might now call a teabagger, a true believer. You threw in with the Bush gang, whether it was for good reason or not. Do you now? You were in favor of a strong response to 9/11.
Yeah, I was, and in fact, that was the reason why I backed up the Bush government, and it was really for that more than anything else.
Do you feel that strong response? And when we say strong, you know, that's as if to say that, well, if we, you know, hunted down the guys who actually did it and put them on trial and threw them in jail for life, that would not be strong. I think that's strong, but
no, that would be fine with me. I wouldn't have any problem with that. In fact, the original the war in Afghanistan, I think, was absolutely warranted after the 9/11 attacks, because after all, Al Qaeda was using Afghanistan as a base. That's beyond any doubt. So, you know, at a certain point, you have to stand up and do something to protect yourself against any more of that kind of thing. And so I was in favor of that. I was a little bit less in favor of the Iraq war. But at the time, as you know, there was a whole lot of disinformation out there about weapons of mass destruction and such.
There was.
And like most people, I bought it.
I think a lot of people did. Hang on to the thought, Charles. We've got to take a quick break, commercial radio and all that stuff.
Sure.
Charles Johnson joins us from littlegreenfootballs.com. Delighted to have him here. He's going to be with us for the hour. We got callers coming in. Looking forward to talking to you guys. 800-277-1637, extension 703. Brad in for Mike. Much more straight ahead. I see them everywhere. I miss those arms that held me when all
chances are upon.
Live from Texas. Yes, we are.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Yes, I do.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
It's not right because Progressive Radio and Dallas going off the air. I don't like it.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs.
No stairs here.
Clowns to the left of me. Jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Stuck in the middle once again with you, the official, unofficial Brad Blog theme song. I'm Brad Friedman, sitting in for Mike Malloy on the Mike Malloy program, and I'm happy to say I'm also now stuck in the middle with fellow independent and fellow blogger Charles Johnson of LittleGreenFootballs.com. You want to get in a word to him and or I, 2146, no, that's the wrong one, 800, there we go, 800-277-1637. That's 800-277-1637, extension 703. You can also join the live chat at bradblog.com. And if you dare, you can view the live video webcast, the live video broadcast live from Dallas, Texas. All right, we're back with Charles Johnson here, who has moved. I'm trying to figure out how to describe you, Charles. So you were on the right-ish, and now, help me out.
Under protest.
You were on the right under protest? Well, you didn't have any problem throwing in with those pajamas media wingnuts, Charles.
Well, you know, when we started that that endeavor, the original goal was to bring aboard both left and right-wing bloggers, and to make it much less of a partisan endeavor than it's turned out to be.
How'd that go?
Well, when we started, we did have we had Mark Cooper from The Nation, mm-hmm. And USC Annenberg School of Journalism. We had some other people originally on board with us who were supposed to be representing the left side of things, you know. But I mean, eventually, it just it started to morph into what it is now, which is a pretty partisan right-wing operation.
Pretty partisan being the understatement of the year, Charles. But to help you out, it was actually not only Mark Cooper, it was also David Korn. And then
right.
There was a third guy who was not a wingnut who was invited to join Pajamas Media, and that would be yours truly, Brad
yes.
Friedman of Brad Blog.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
But I chose not to.
So we were trying to bring people like you on board. You know, unfortunately, it just it moved in another direction, and as it moved further in that direction,
Charles,
kind of needed to distance myself.
Charles, three of us, about 40 of them. Just saying. So
us versus them. See, we're back to that again, aren't we?
Yeah, well, you know, that's Fox News' version of fair and balanced. Three guys who aren't crazy. Let's go through the reasons why you parted ways with the right, and then I want to hit some of the stories you picked up today, which are great. And, you know, I'm giving Charles some hell here, but let me tell you, I cannot recommend littlegreenfootballs.com enough. I really think you'd do a hell of a good job over there,
thank
Charles,
you.
And it is a must-read. By the way, what is Little Green Footballs? Where the hell did that come from?
Well, I'm not allowed to share that, unfortunately. I would.
You're not?
No, I've sworn a sacred oath never to reveal the origin of that. I can tell you that it came from an incident in my youth when I was in a band in Japan.
Well, now you're just going to distract me trying to figure out what the hell it is that you're trying to hide with the little green. But okay, I'll let it go.
It has nothing to do with drugs. All right. A lot of people think it's drugs. It's not.
Okay. All right. Let's real quickly. You did a post. I think the top 10 reasons why you parted ways with the right.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just fly through them real quickly, and then we can talk about them a little bit. Number one, and I don't think they're in any particular order, are they?
Well, you know, that post actually, it kind of encapsulated mm-hmm. a lot of the stuff I'd been writing about all year.
Okay.
And catching a whole lot of hell from the right wing for.
Yeah, I know, and I was watching it and loving it, Charles.
And it actually, believe it or not, that entire post came out in about 3 or 4 minutes. I guess it had been sitting in my subconscious long enough that when I finally started writing it, it just... it burst out all over the place.
Yeah, and it seems to have gotten a little bit of attention for some reason.
I didn't notice.
Yeah, it did. Number one, the reason why you parted ways with the right, support for fascists, both in America and in Europe. Which fascists are we supporting, or is the right supporting?
Well, I mean, I named some names there. One of the most important ones is Pat Buchanan, a guy who was previously marginalized and pushed out to the fringes by even by conservatives such as William F. Buckley, who actually wrote an entire book that featured Pat Buchanan called In Search of Anti-Semitism, in which he concluded that Pat Buchanan was an anti-Semite. And, you know, he repudiated Buchanan and all of his ideology. But unfortunately, we are back to the point where Pat Buchanan has been brought back into the mainstream. He appears on MSNBC and often on Fox News as well. And his columns are published in all of the major right-wing news sites like Town Hall, Human Events, Daily, all of them. They all publish his columns.
But you know what, Charles? Pat Buchanan is the sanest of them all. I mean, when we're comparing them to Michelle Malkin and Coulter, I mean...
Yeah, well, they come in for some criticism in my post, too.
No, I know they do, but I just hate to say it, that we're in a world where Pat Buchanan is the sane one. Number two, support for bigotry, hatred, and white supremacism. Well, that goes without saying. Support for throwing women back into the Dark Ages and general religious fanaticism. I think that also is understandable. Support for anti-science bad craziness?
Yes.
Yes.
This is a big one for me. This is actually one of the main points I didn't particularly highlight it in that post, but if you read my blog, you'll see that I'm extremely pro-science and extremely opposed to people who are anti-science, and I put much of the religious right and much of the Republican Party in that category.
And, you know, Desi Doyen, who's my co-host on the Green News Report, we do it, as a matter of fact, to folks at some of our radio stations may just have heard it at the top of the hour instead of the top of the hour news. She has been very delighted about the work that you've done on the climate issues, on the pro-science issues over at Little Green Footballs.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, that's another... That's an issue where I really did change my opinion.
You felt differently before.
If you go back a few years, you'll find that I was pretty much parroting the climate change denialist line, and you know, I had bought into a lot of the propaganda that was being floated out there, and a lot of that was simply because I wasn't well informed. But there was a documentary that was made in Britain called The Great Global Warming Swindle.
Right.
And this was actually a turning point for me, because when I first posted about this, I bought it, you know, hook, line, and sinker. I said, you know, this is global warming's a hoax. You know, evil scientists are trying to trick us. I was right there. But then shortly after I started posting about it, I began to read scientific critiques of the film and realized that a whole lot of that movie was not only distorted but deliberately false. And at that point, I kind of decided that it was time for me to really inform myself on this subject, because it was becoming such a big issue. And so I went into I get really obsessed with these things, and I tend to really dive in head first. And I started reading everything I could grab on the subject. And the more I read, the more I just had to stop denying, because the weight of the evidence is so great, I couldn't deny it anymore.
And this sort of brings me to there was a bunch of other lists, support, the reasons why you left the right, support for homophobic bigotry, support for anti-government lunacy, support for conspiracy theories and hate speech, the right-wing blogosphere that is almost universally dominated by raging hate speech.
Yes, absolutely.
Hatred for President Obama that goes far beyond simply criticizing his policies into racism, hate speech, and bizarre conspiracy theories, and anti-Islamic bigotry that goes far beyond simply criticizing radical Islam into support for fascism, violence, and genocide. But
yes,
you hit on a point that I want to pick up on, Charles Johnson. The information you were getting about climate science, you say, was purposely false. You were being misled. This
Absolutely.
Seems to me to be the problem with, boy, Charles, damn near every issue that actually matters in this country. We just had Andy Worthington on, a great journalist whose work I hope you know, the guy who's been covering Gitmo like nobody else in the world, from London. And, you know, we're to the point, there's so much disinformation about Gitmo, which I think is damned important, that you've even got the Democrats out there saying, oh, no, we can't close down Gitmo because, you know, these guys are going to run wild. This is about disinformation.
Yes.
What the hell are we going to do? I mean, if you look at Fox News, if you look at the airwaves, and not just Fox News, by the way, but, you know, the corporate mainstream media, is there any hope, Charles?
I kind of would like to think that the blogosphere can kind of play a role there, because what we can do as bloggers is to try to do our best to bring facts and as much truth as we can muster to as many people as we can. And that's what I'm trying to do right now on the climate change subject.
Well, you're doing a great job, but did Fox News have you on during this whole phony climate gate, this stolen email scandal? Did they have you on to give your perspective?
No, of course not. No, they don't want to hear my perspective.
You're saying they're not fair and balanced, Charles Johnson?
Can you believe it? It's amazing, isn't it? It's really, they don't want to hear that stuff.
Now, if this was just something that was amusing and fun and, we could make light of it, and we do make light of it, but this is damned important. And all of these issues, one after another, healthcare, global warming, all these wars that we're involved in and so on and so forth, I believe that we are in the mess we're in because of this disparity in the media, because of the out-and-out disinformation that's out there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the blogosphere can save it.
Especially on the climate change subject, I mean, there's big money behind this denial industry.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the main denial groups are funded by energy industries, and they are able to put large amounts of money. And their strategy is to raise doubt about the science. It's not what they do is they don't actually conduct their own scientific research. They pick apart the actual scientific research, and find little flaws and then highlight those and turn those into huge issues when really they're just tiny specks of water in a flood.
It's unbelievable. We're speaking with Charles Johnson. We're going to take a quick break and then go straight to Mike in Chicago. So hang in there, Mike. Charles Johnson from littlegreenfootballs.com. Speaking truth to power, finding out if there is hope for the teabaggers out there. I don't know if there is. By the way, Charles, long overdue. I would have given it to you. I got busy and distracted, but you are clearly long overdue the rarely bestowed Brad Blog Intellectually Honest Conservative Award. And so I haven't been able to do it on the blog. Let me do it here on the air. If you still even call yourself conservative.
Well, I'll take an award. I'll always take an award.
Then you got it, my friend. How about Intellectually Honest American Award? Awarded
excellent.
To Charles Johnson of littlegreenfootballs.com. He's going to be back with more. And your calls, 800-277-1637, extension 703. Join the bloggers who have taken over the media tonight. Much more right after this. Program. Good music choice, Tony. You rock out there in L.A. Also in L.A., I believe, is our friend Charles Johnson of littlegreenfootballs.com. Let's see here. Do I have him back? There we go. Charles, Dave Clifton, our engineer tonight, as well as the owner and GM of this radio station that may be no more by the end of the week, other than on the internet and the TVs and stuff. He suggests I call you a recovering Bush voter. Is that fair?
Yeah, well, that's fair. I do want to point out that in 2000 I voted for Al Gore, so
okay.
I do have that going for me.
All right, you got a lot going for you. Well, you know what? You should have never hung around with those teabaggers in the first place because they have tarnished your otherwise fine person.
Well, if you want to talk about teabaggers, I never was part of that.
I know you weren't. No, but
in fact, I was harshly critical of them from the very beginning.
You were. No, you were. And but with whatever we call them, those wingnuts. They've ruined your reputation, but you have gotten it back, and it seems to me in spades by doing the right thing and by speaking out. And I hope since we both happen to be in Los Angeles, well, since we both live in Los Angeles, maybe I'll get to shake your hand soon. Let me get to Mike in Chicago. Welcome to the Mike Malloy program, Mike in Chicago.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. How are you? What's up?
Thank you for taking my call. Well, I would say if anything, my life has been progression from liberal and progressive to where I'm now conservative, perhaps right wing, and I rather like teabaggers.
Why is that?
Well, I don't know. I started out as a child in the 50s in a family of Adlai Stevenson liberals.
Uh huh.
And I went off to a good Ivy League school and lived through the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And was initially very much against the war. And as I got to know the leaders of the anti-war movement, and I got to know quite a few of them, I realized that they actually liked Ho Chi Minh.
But what is...
And that was an awakening for me.
Well, okay. Well, but what... Well, they liked Ho Chi Minh. So you're talking about you were a liberal and you turned...
And I graduated there. From there, I moved on through libertarian.
That was about 40 years ago, Mike. All right, so what is it that you like?
Reagan Republicanism, and now I guess I'm a wingnut.
All right, wingnut, what is it that you like about the teabaggers?
What I like about the teabaggers,
yeah,
is they represent perhaps a naive throwback to people who just value liberty for its own sake.
Okay, that's there's a whole bunch of nice words, but what is it that
right.
you like about the teabaggers? What is it that they support that you support?
Okay, fair question. They do not support a government takeover of the healthcare system.
Uh-huh.
They do support a strong national defense and a vigorous anti-terrorist.
Okay, hold right there. Wait, hold on, Mike. Hang on.
You asked me.
No, I do, and I want to respond to that, and I want to get
sure.
Charles' thoughts
sure.
on this as well. And by the way, Charles, I know it's earlier out there in L.A. Are you able to stay over at the top of the hour for a little bit if needed?
Sure, I can.
Okay, because I don't want to give Mike short shrift here. And I suspect we have some other callers as well. But you say they don't support government takeover of healthcare. Who on the Democratic side supports government takeover of healthcare?
Everybody.
Mike? Who?
Everybody.
Who? Name one.
Barack Obama.
Barack Obama supports a government.
Nancy Pelosi.
Okay, hang on. You really believe that Barack Obama supports a government takeover of healthcare? Is that correct?
Absolutely, 100%. I'm convinced of that.
Charles, do you want to take this one or do I?
I think you can have that one. I'm actually a lot sort of toward the middle of the healthcare debate, and I don't. I've changed on this too, and
uh-huh.
I've actually come to favor some kind of government
healthcare. Well, you know what? Here's the deal. I'm not on particularly on either side, any particular side. I just want to tell the truth, and the fact is,
yeah.
Barack Obama has never proposed a government takeover. Of healthcare.
I don't have the references in front of me.
I wish. Hang on. Hold your thought, Mike.
The writings of his.
Hold your thought. Well, okay.
Okay.
Hold your thought. I wish he would recommend that, but as president, he has not. Hold your thought. I got to get to a break here at the top of the hour. But Mike, I will take you if you want to hang on until after the top of the hour.
I'm more than happy to hang on.
Charles Johnson is going to hang on with us. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Oh, now we're getting started. Do I have to get out yet? Okay. Give us a call, 800-277-1637, extension 703. Brad in for Malloy. Live from Dallas, Texas, home of the teabaggers. Stay tuned. Much more right after this. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy program. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy tonight and again tomorrow. Live from Dallas, Texas. We're glad you can join us. We are rolling with the live chat at bradblog.com during the show here, and an extra special treat or an extra special nightmare, depending on how you look at it. We've got live video feed happening over at bradblog.com from the studios here at AM 1360 Rational Radio in Dallas, Texas, where unless something happens before the week's end, these guys are about to go off the air, off of our progressive, I'm sorry, off of our public airwaves, our public airwaves. We're going to lose yet another progressive voice on our public airwaves. They're going to continue over on the internets and maybe even a TV station. I don't know, but I want to keep them on the air. If anyone can help, consider this your beacon, your signal that we're sending out for help. Please help. Save Progressive Radio in Dallas. Dave Clifton is going to join us in a bit. He's the owner of the station. He's going to talk to us about their woes and the woes of progressive media overall and the rig system and the lack of competition over our public airwaves. 800-277-1637 is our phone number, extension 703. I am, of course, your friendly blogger from bradblog.com, and I'm joined by a fellow blogger, a fellow independent blogger, Charles Johnson of littlegreenfootballs.com, once regarded as a beacon of right. You see how, Charles, I'm trying to figure out how to describe you.
It's tough.
It is tough. I dropped my pen. Once described as a beacon of right-leaning, conservative-leaning. See, I always had to put quotes around the word conservative because none of these guys were actually conservative when they said. Anyway, Charles is with us. He's said he has left the right. Let's put it that way. And we were speaking before the break with Mike in Chicago, who says that he was a progressive, a liberal, he says, who turned into a conservative about 40 years ago. And he was, and we were asking him why and asked him to hold over. So, Mike, you're still with us, right?
I'm still with you, yeah.
You had brought up, we were going through the list, and I want to let Charles hit some of these.
Sure.
But first, on the healthcare front, you said that Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, all of them were in favor of a government takeover of healthcare. If Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, and all the rest of them were actually, actually in favor of a government takeover of healthcare, why do you suppose they haven't done it?
They haven't been able to yet.
Because they haven't even proposed it, have they, Mike?
Well, that's disingenuous.
Really?
They're all on record as favoring, at the very least, a single-payer system. They've all written extensively praising that's not fair. I don't have the references in front of me.
Well, I don't have them in front of me either.
I'll be more than happy to email you something.
Great. Please do, because don't tell me that Nancy Pelosi is in favor of a single-payer system, because I'm going to get all excited about it, because I haven't heard that she was.
No. Politicians, good politicians,
yeah,
don't always go for the whole loaf. Sometimes they go for half.
Oh, so they're secretly in favor.
Example in the current debate. Okay. In the current debate.
Yeah.
Do you think the Democrats are for a public option?
Some of them. Not enough of them.
Most of them say they're for public option. But here's my take on that.
Mike is a public.
The public option was put in as a red herring to be abandoned in order to show how compromising they are, and that you'll see the final bill will not have a public option, and that was planned as the big concession right from the start. Now, I can't prove that, but I think the result will be
What does that have to do with the government takeover of health care? You just said that the public option, right. do you consider the public option to be a government takeover of health care?
It's a partial takeover.
It is not a takeover of health care.
It is a partial takeover.
Oh, Jesus
Christ. Let me tell you the most important.
You know what, Mike? Hang on a second. No. Mike, not your show. Hang on a second, Mike. Now, if you believe that private health insurance corporations should spend twice as much as anybody else on administrative costs, if you believe that they should have the immoral position of earning billions and billions off of your health and my health, then say that.
Reference to that, billions of billions?
You don't. The private health insurance companies don't make billions of dollars.
They do, but their profits. I've researched this extensively.
Okay.
Their profit margins are in the 3-4% range of premiums. So if you cut all premiums by 5%,
yeah,
they wouldn't make any money. They would lose money. Now, administrative costs is a tough one, because if you believe in fighting fraud and waste, you do have to reject some claims. Now, you know, it's often said that they hire a lot of people whose almost sole job is to reject legitimate claims. Well, one man's legitimate claim is another man's
Mike, I don't have a lot of time here. The point is, our administrative costs are twice that of all the other countries, and our lifespan is less than theirs. Something has gone terribly wrong here. Now, let's move on, because I want to let Charles respond to you. You had a list of things. You said that there was a government takeover of healthcare, even though there is apparently no evidence of that. What was your
Can
other
I
reason?
One more piece of evidence. Just one more piece of evidence.
Go, quick.
Okay, IMAB. You know what that is?
You're what?
IMAB, Independent Medical Advisory Board. That's the centerpiece of the bill.
Uh-huh.
And it's what Sarah Palin was referring to as a death panel.
Right.
And look it up and look at the powers that it has and the potential powers that it has and look at the extent to which its decisions are unappealable. And then tell me if you would be happy having George Bush and Dick Cheney appoint the members to that board, if that would make you feel comfortable.
Since they're not death panels,
well,
yeah, I don't care. Thanks, Mike.
I'm saying what you call death panels. I didn't say they are death panels.
I got to go. Thanks, brother.
What I don't understand about
go ahead,
that
Charles.
Don't insurance companies right now have the ability to deny you coverage?
Of course they do.
Don't they already have these powers?
Yes.
What is the difference, really?
There is no difference. It's, you know, these guys, these knuckleheads are brainwashed like Mike in Chicago to believe in these death panels. Of course I don't want George Bush and Dick Cheney deciding if I live or die, but that's not what's going on in this legislation.
No one has ever proposed that, and in fact, the American people wouldn't put up with that. That's just not going to happen. This is actually another reason why I had to make a break with the right, this kind of insane insistence on things that are just illogical and false.
He's a crazy man. Give us a call, 800-277-1637, extension 703. Let's go to Jeremy in Orange County, California. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Program, Jeremy.
Hey, listen, I know I'm asking your guest for a lot, but you know what? The big one, the big illusion that we're all told, the only reason teabaggers exist is because they believe that the media is extremely liberally skewed. And I'd like you to just blow the doors off of that, because we both know it's crap. It's total and complete, you know, crap.
All right.
Crap. The media is completely corporate. I've studied it. You've probably studied it, too. So just lay it out. Rich Bond said in, like, 90, he said, look, it's just that he admitted it. It's just a ploy by the right to sort of play the refs.
Thanks, Jeremy. Hang on. Thanks, Jeremy.
It's really all about making money and not much else. That's really what it comes down to.
But they are corporatized. They are not serving the public. And, you know, with all of these licenses and the license that we're about to lose here at AM 1360 Rational Radio, with those licenses comes the responsibility to serve the public interest. That doesn't happen anymore, does it? It's all about making money, it seems to me.
Oh, absolutely. And pandering to the lowest common denominator to do it, because that's how they make the most money.
Well, that's right. And, you know, the idea, Clear Channel doesn't really want me going on the airwaves 24/7, 3 hours a day on all of Rush Limbaugh's affiliate stations and talking about how corporations are not people and they should not have the rights to do what it is they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So I think they're going to lean to the right, and I don't consider it conservative, but to the right by their very nature. Does that make sense?
I think there's a kind of a tendency to among the media to want to cover all the bases because, you know, for example, when MSNBC kind of leans toward the left, sort of, Fox News leans to the right because they're going to be able to pander to that audience. So it's really, but again, it all comes down to what they think is going to make them the most money. And if another station is already covering a certain area, well, they'll go to the other area.
Okay, then explain to me why it is that Stephanie Miller, a progressive talk show a person who's on in the morning Pacific time, your time, 6 to 9 p.m., she's on some 40 affiliate stations. Crazy wingnut loon Laura Ingraham of Fox News is on 400 affiliate stations at the same time. And yet, wherever Laura Ingraham and Stephanie Miller go head-to-head, Stephanie Miller wins, Laura Ingraham loses. Why is Laura Ingraham on 400 stations and Stephanie Miller is on 40, if it's about making money?
You got it.
I really don't know. That's something I'm not an expert on.
Yeah.
You're going to have to ask them.
and I've tried, and they don't want to answer. Because
sure
I would suggest it's not just about making money, at least not by the people they put on the air. Perhaps making money overall. Let's not talk about what a corporate scam we've got rolling on all of these issues. You want to hang on for one more segment, Charles?
Sure.
Okay. One more segment with Charles Johnson. Your calls, oh, Mark in Manhattan Beach is going to be with us right after this and much more. Straight ahead, Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy.
Need a new love. Yeah, I'm ready. Want my time. Yeah, I'm willing. So when there's nobody, I'll be your man. Yeah, I'll be your man. Time gets tough. No, they get tougher.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are a-changing.
I wish they were changing. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy with Charles Johnson of LittleGreenFootballs.com joining us here for our last, for just a few more minutes. Really appreciate you hanging on for this, Charles. Let me get one caller here before I let you go at the bottom of the hour. Mark in Manhattan Beach. Oh, Mark, welcome to the Mike Malloy program.
Hey, Brad, nice to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Can I say who you are?
Sure.
Veritas, how do you say it?
Veritas Vampirus.
Veritas Vampirus. He's a, let's say you're a music critic, a radio critic, a critic of progressives, liberals, right, left, everything else. Fair enough?
That pretty much covers it.
There you go.
And hey, you're doing an excellent job, man.
Thank you, brother. And I know you're not easy to please. You got a question or a thought for Charles Johnson?
Yeah, I do. It's for both of you. Hey, Charles.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Listen.
Having trouble hearing you, Charles. Get closer to your phone if you can. Can we pipe up Charles a little bit? For some reason, he's real low. Okay, go ahead.
All right. Hey, I'm going to put the sword on you guys a little bit. This is a capitalism. Fundamentalism, disinformation, coercion, those are capitalist tools. Those are ways of making the overly wealthy even more wealthy. What is perplexing you guys?
Well, I don't think it is capitalism. I mean, I guess it's unbridled capitalism, but I don't think capitalism was ever meant to say, hey, anything goes, was it?
The definition of capitalism is the use of wealth to make more wealth. That's a rigged game. That's a very exclusive game, and there are no rules there.
Fair enough. Good point. Thanks, Mark.
All right.
We'll talk soon, brother. Thanks for calling.
All right, man.
In.
Bye.
All right. Is that what this is all about? Is it the capitalist system?
I've got to admit, I'm a pretty dyed-in-the-wool capitalist myself, so I'm not exactly going to turn around and bite the hand that feeds me. I've spent my life trying to get ahead, and I think that's everyone's right in this country.
I think it is everyone's right, but I don't think... Did you see Michael Moore's Capitalism, the film?
No, I did not.
I wish you would, because, you know, it's not... frankly, I'm a capitalist, too, in general, but when we have markets that have been so rigged and bought up that there is no... You know, capitalism has competition at its core. That's what's gone.
Oh, there's definitely some, you know, there's some validity to that, I think. That's part of the reason why we need to have some regulations on capitalism, because unrestrained capitalism is not healthy.
No, it's not. How about are corporations people?
Well, legally they are.
And how do you feel about that?
Unfortunately, that does lead to some abuses, and... it's hard to know, because there's a good legal reason for making corporations equivalent to individual people, but it also has a downside. So,
like with a lot of things in our country, you know, you have to balance both sides of it.
All right. Well, the way you looked into the climate change disinformation, I hope you look into this information about corporate personhood, because I think that is ultimately what's killing our country and the amount of money the corporations are able to dump into not just the media, but into the elections, into the campaigns.
Yeah, well, I definitely agree that there's a whole lot of corruption that has these corporations, large corporations, at its source. And you can see it in the whole climate change debate especially, where the large corporations are pumping so much disinformation and noise into the national debate that they've managed to tilt American public opinion largely against the idea that we should do something about global warming.
We've got about 30 seconds left, Charles, but I want you to wrap up, if you can, by letting us know, is there hope? These folks, these teabaggers on the right who you've been so brilliantly railing against of late, will they ever get it, or is this? Are we just going to be stuck with this phony right-left red-blue paradigm forever?
You know, honestly, I recommend a really good book by Sam Tannenhaus of the New York Times. It's called The Death of Conservatism. I think he does an excellent job of identifying the real problems in the current conservative movement. It's become a very backward-looking, his term is revanchist movement.
We know the problems, but will it right itself? Will they become legitimate ever again?
I see no sign of this on the horizon at this point. I'd like to think that they would, because I think our country works best when there are functioning parties.
Not a hopeful thought, and I concur with you, Charles. I hope we'll get to talk more about this in the future. I think your ace is Charles Johnson, the winner now of the Bradblog Intellectually Honest American Award. Check him out at littlegreenfootballs.com. I promise you, it's a top-notch read. Thank you, brother. Really appreciate
it. Thanks a lot,
you.
Brad.
Yes, we are broadcasting live from Dallas. That's right. For all you 80s TV fans out there, there's a little Dallas for you. Smartly done, Tony. Brad Friedman of Bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy for just a little bit longer tonight. We'll be back tomorrow night also from Dallas. We're broadcasting from AM 1360 Rational Radio in Dallas. Mike Malloy's Dallas affiliate, who, as of the end of this week, may be no more for the terrestrial airwaves anyway. I'm none too happy about it. So I'm joined right now by the owner, the GM of AM 1360, Rational Radio, soon to become Rational Broadcasting, Dave Clifton, who is also our engineer tonight. So if anything goes wrong in this next segment, you know who to blame. That would be Desi, who's now taken over the control room.
I'm also the janitor. That's what I'm
also the janitor
known as around here. Yeah.
You're doing yeoman's work on everything except the janitor part.
Well, yeah, I know it's gotten a little messy.
It's kind of a mess.
I've been depressed this week.
I can't understand why. So you are depressed. I can hardly blame you. Why the hell is AM 1360 going off the air?
Well, we started out in January of 2008. So. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, basically, and we had enough money to go a few years the way things were at that time, and I knew something was going on with Wall Street, but I didn't anticipate the great bank heist of 2008, and lost about half our money on that through various machinations, and so did the sponsors, the people who normally advertise on radio around here, and to start a new station, you have to build it up slowly.
Right.
We were making good progress the first 3 or 4 months. Well, we really went on 24/7 on July 1st, and we were on a night operation starting in January. We leased the station from somebody that had been written a hot check by Air America, so it took us a while to get their full confidence. And but we got a nice 50,000 watt station going, and we were making good progress on revenue, and then the great bank heist of 2008 happened.
And so that really knocked out advertisers. Is it possible for, you know, how does a Clear Channel survive? A Citadel who just declared bankruptcy.
Well, they go bankrupt. And then, you know, it's all pre-planned bankruptcy. And
they can do that, but an independent station like you.
Yeah, there's nobody funding this station but my wife and myself. And we have a couple of investors now who will try to get us another stick, and we'll see how that comes out. And we have an option on television
stick. Another stick, let me just say, for non-radio
jargon.
People and for non-Texans.
Another
yes. transmitter.
Right.
So you may come back on a different frequency
if
the gods are with us.
There will come a time before too long when everybody will have internet radio in their car anyway. And really that's what terrestrial radio is about, is people in their cars. Cars are radios on wheels. And that will change eventually, and we get a lot of hits. One of our shows got 150,000 hits 1 week, about 3 weeks ago, on this Ustream that we're doing right now. So, you know, we can convince advertisers to go to us that way, whether we're on the air or not. But, of course, we want people to be able to listen in their car.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. You can survive on the Internet, but it really ticks me off that, you know, these wingnut folks out there have these stations. They're reaching people in their cars. You know, Rush Limbaugh is on some 600 affiliate stations over our public airwaves. I have to keep saying that over and over again because people don't understand that these airwaves belong to the people. You
well,
own
under,
the station,
the rules,
but you don't own these airwaves, do you?
Under the rules that are followed today, the FCC doesn't follow most of the rules that used to exist when I was learning about radio when I was a kid. And they really can have as many stations as they want for whatever reason they want. Rush Limbaugh lost hundreds of millions of dollars before he got to the point he's at today. And so did Fox Network, you know, Fox Faux
right.
News or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And we have about five fascist stations here in Dallas. And most of them are losing money now, or at least making less than half what they were before, but they were established for years before us. And I have to say fascist is Mussolini definition, the union of corporations and government, and that is what we live under. And my wife and I decided that there needed to be somebody telling the truth, and you know, so we gave it a try. In 2006, there was actually 2005 and 2006, there was a progressive radio station here in town. It was an Air America station. They made a profit in their first year and a half.
What happened to them?
They were bought off the air by the Catholics. And, you know, I don't mean that unkindly, but that's
right.
basically the short summary of it. The Catholics are getting contributions from the listeners on there, and they're doing okay, too. That station was nowhere near as good as this station in terms of signal. I think it's a 5-kilowatt station. This is a 50-kilowatt station. Their antenna location wasn't as good. But back then, everybody was real upset about George Bush, and there were advertisers. And we didn't have the great bank heist at that time. But anyway, we thought that since they were making a profit in a year and a half and we had enough money to do this for 3 years, that we ought to be able to do okay.
Right.
Know? And Dallas County has voted progressive in both the last two general
elections. Which people don't understand. It's one of the first things you mentioned when I got here a couple of days ago, that Dallas has gone, is it more Democratic registration?
No,
or is
actually
voting?
Yeah, well, both of the last two general elections, for meaning federal elections,
right.
In 2006 and 2008, Obama won in Dallas County, and all the congressional seats went for in Dallas County.
And yet, five crazy wingnut, you call them fascist stations, corporatist right-wing stations on the air here in Dallas, the only progressive voice. Is it fair to say you're the only progressive voice in Dallas?
Yeah, it's pretty fair to say. You can get some stuff on Free Speech TV on,
right.
if you have Dish Network. And
if you're willing to pay. But again, it's the people's airwaves. And this is what just ticks me off.
Yeah.
They don't understand. The competition is gone.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
The people who listen to the radio and are supporting the right-wing stations, only about three out of the five are actually making money now, and they're making half what they were before. So it's hit everybody. The big stations, the established stations, steal from the new stations. When you find a new sponsor, they're gone pretty quick because the other guys lower their price. and then the TV stations steal from the big stations. So radio is definitely having a real hard time anyway, and starting a new station always takes some time.
And it takes these leases for the airwaves.
Yeah.
They're actually free or close to it from the government. You can lease these airwaves, these frequencies. But then explain how this works. You don't own the lease, even. You have to lease
right,
the
really
lease,
right? It's
really
what's called a time brokerage agreement.
Right.
And the owner of the station is responsible for making sure that we don't break any FCC rules and for keeping the required legal logs and engineers available and so on.
He's the owner of the license, right?
Yeah, he's the owner of the license.
Which he gets for free.
Yeah.
And then you pay him.
That's correct. I mean, he paid a little something when he got it decades ago. You know?
And you pay him to use that
right.
frequency.
And it's kind of like a real estate scam in a way because stations in Dallas, the Dallas-Fort Worth is – I think the fourth biggest market in the country. There's 6 million people that can hear this station during the day when it's on at 50,000 watts.
Right.
And so it's a very valuable piece of real estate, basically, and the values are way inflated.
How much does it cost? And I'll leave it to you if you want to say.
I don't want to say.
Okay. But we're talking about...
My wife might be listening.
Oh, okay.
She knows.
But we're talking about tens of thousands of dollars, really, to be able to stay on the air, to own these licenses, or not to own these licenses.
And a lot of other
each
expenses,
month, right?
Too. Yeah.
And a lot of other expenses. Yeah. Can progressive radio survive anywhere if the economy turns around? Can independent progressive radio survive, or is it all just going to go to the corporations,
period? I think it can, but the corporations have definitely bought it all up, and they're regretting it now as they go bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
It's not serving them well either, except for getting their political agenda across. But, you know, things tend to level off after a while. This is ridiculously unlevel, but I think it'll change. And we'll stick in every way we can.
Well, I hope you guys can survive because we do need your voice. And, you know, and just to make sure that the blame is properly spread around here, Ronald Reagan in the 80s, of
Bill
course,
Clinton.
The Fairness Doctrine, he did away with that. This allowed guys like Rush Limbaugh on the air. But Bill Clinton, 1996, Telecommunications Act, allowed these huge corporations
to just
buy up all
these licenses. It used to be you could only have one or two things in a given market.
Now, did that inflate the price of these leases, the price that guys like you have to pay to get on the air because so many of these frequencies are owned by so few people that they can...
I can't really say.
Yeah.
But, you know, what did inflate it was worth a lot.
Yeah.
It's not anymore. And the Internet bites into it.
Well, have they lowered the price for you then, Dave?
They did a little bit.
Yeah.
But somebody outbid us for it starting in January.
What's going to be on AM 1360 starting in January?
I am not even privy to that, although I have a couple of guesses. Biz Radio may be on.
Biz Radio?
Biz
Radio.
What
the hell is that?
Well,
business
that's
radio?
Casino capitalism.
Oh, brother.
And I won't call it one of the fascist stations, but it serves that corporatist interest, you know.
We need that like a hole in the head, don't we?
Well, we've got holes in the head. And, you know, it's a labor of love and a passion and... We'll do what we can to keep on. We can't afford to lose the kind of money that the think tanks put up in the 80s and 90s that took over radio. And, you know, conservative listeners, so-called, are willing to be told what to believe and how to talk about
mm-hmm.
it. They want that.
Right.
And so we've got not only the what I call the fascist stations, the stations that are saying whatever the corporations want them to control people and control the government. But we've also got a lot of preachers on, and the preachers are also telling people what to believe and how to talk about it. And there are, you know, depending on how you talk about it, there are 20 stations in town that are making it just fine on asking people for money because they're telling them what they want to hear about what to believe and how to talk about it concerning religion. And then there's those other five, and at least three of those are losing money, and, you know, that's not a bad thing.
Well, you know what? I have hope for the future because I know there's guys like you, Dave Clifton, who are willing to go out there to take a chance to fight for the good guys, to fight the good fight. I hope someone hears the message we're putting out there tonight. We need progressive radio in Dallas. We need
but
it in every damn...
progressives really don't want to be told what to believe and how to talk
no,
about
No, they
it.
Don't. They
and
don't.
So that's a difference, you know.
We don't all march in
and
lockstep.
Rich progressives don't understand the damage that's been done by... fascist radio. somehow.
If they understood it, they would be forking over the dough to keep folks like you on the air, wouldn't
they?
Yeah,
I was an investor in Novam, and yep. Shelley Drobny was wiped out in that venture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's there's a lot of sadness going around, but he's okay now, and you know him too. We'll be okay.
We'll be okay, but we need to keep fighting this fight because I think this is the cause of all evil, frankly, is the ownership of the media and the corporatized media, and we need independent voices. And I got to get to a break here, Dave. Yeah. You know how this radio thing works.
Yep.
But I want to thank you for hosting me this week. I want to thank you for fighting that good fight. You're a hero, brother. It's been a great week so far. We'll be back here tomorrow. As well, but thanks a bunch.
Well, we're
going to
have live local programming all day long and on the internet and wherever else we can get it.
As of, I think, Thursday or Friday, AM 1360, rationalradio.org becomes rationalbroadcasting.com, correct?
That's correct. That's the name of the corporation,
all right.
The DBA.
Support these guys. Dave Clifton, thank you, brother, very much. Appreciate it. All right, Brad Friedman in for Malloy, getting to a break here, running late. We got some callers. We'll get to them after this break. Joe in San Diego. Hang in there. Tony out in L.A. Thanks for putting up with me tonight. I'll get this all straightened out tomorrow. All right. And you can still get in if you want to try. 800-277-1637, extension 703. Brad in for Malloy, live and local across the globe. From Rational Radio.
Talking to the truth seekers.
Thank you, brother. Rational
Mike
Radio.
Mike wasn't here to say it, so somebody had to.
Thank you, sir. Somebody's got... You should do this show tomorrow night. I could use a day off already. I'm exhausted. Brad in for Malloy. Stick with us. More after this. Of the Mike Malloy program out here tonight in Dallas, Texas. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy. Someone in the chat room for Earth was wondering, what do they mean when they say that the government is taking over health care? The answer, they don't mean anything. It means they've been told to say that by Fox News and they simply repeat it. My thanks tonight to our buddy engineer Tony Sorrentino out in L.A. He's our L.A. engineer out at L.A.'s K-Talk AM 1150. And back here, our engineer is, of course, Dave Clifton. You just saw him here at AM 1360 Rational Radio. Also, my thanks to Sean Compton out here as well. Thanks to producer Desi Doyen, who's been hiding from the cameras. Agent 99 at bradblog.com, where they now have to look at my face during the entire show. Sorry and thank you. And, of course, my thanks to Mike and Kathy Malloy for allowing me to sit in while they enjoy the holidays. If you're listening on MikeMalloy.com, be sure to stay tuned for Head On with Bob Kincaid right after this program is over. Let me get the last of our calls here. 800-277-1637, extension 703. Joe in San Diego. What's up, Joe?
Hello there. You're doing a great job there, Brad.
I appreciate that, sir.
I wanted to talk about Stephanie Miller.
Yeah.
And what's confusing about it is that, well, I guess it's not really confused. She condones, I see it that she condones everything that Obama does wrong. Well, this... this thing about we got to vote for him because he's the only thing we have left, and we don't vote for him, the Republicans will get back in. Without even mentioning anything about his weak points, what he's done wrong, why the U.S. attorneys haven't been replaced yet, why he's building up troops in Afghanistan, 30,000 troops he's starting out with.
2 minutes.
So I'm thinking of why is this going on? Why is she supposed to be, you know, a lefty? She doesn't seem to be a lefty.
Well, you know what she is? She's a progressive. She's independent. She's welcome to her own opinions. And you are welcome to the airwaves to share yours. She does take callers. And I do, you know, I'm glad you spoke up. You called in here tonight to talk about that. You know, use your airwaves. As a matter of fact, I know Hal, Tony, our engineer out there in K-Talk, he's doing double duty this week.
Yeah. Well, Hal was on today.
Tony is engineering for Hal Sparks on 79. Have you called in and talked to him about this?
I've tried, but they don't like the subjects I bring up.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm sorry. That's the truth.
That's okay. Well, look, you got to keep talking. Not everybody's going to agree with you. Get out there and make noise. You've made noise here tonight on the Mike Malloy program, and I'm glad you have. Anything else, Joe?
Yeah, how are we doing with the voting machines? Is there any improvement in that? Nobody's been talking about it.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it pathetic? The fact of the matter is, no, we're not doing much better with it. The Democrats have pretty much abandoned all hopes of reform. The good news is that out here in Dallas County, at least, this week, a federal judge has decertified the touchscreen voting systems that are used in Dallas County. That's a good thing. But the fact is, I don't know where that voice is coming from either.
I got to go.
Okay, you got to go. You only got 30 seconds. Thanks, Joe.
All right, thanks a lot, bro.
Talk to you later, brother. He's getting cues from someone. Did you hear that? It said 30 seconds. Anyway, yeah, electronic voting. Everybody loves to not talk about it until the election years, until it's too damn late to do anything about it. Doing the best I can over at bradblog.com, where I will be once again until tomorrow when I rejoin you for another thrilling episode of the Mike Malloy program. Brad Friedman in for Mike. We will talk to you then. Keep it lit.